RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 183 with guest Sean Duby, recorded Thursday, October 14th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I am well, sir. It's the fall. It's travel season. I'm hither and yon, and through the power
More
of time
power
shifting.
To you.
Well, and I'm sure I'll pick up a few on the road while you're off running around saving the world's security crises.
Alrighty.
So we'll have some new shows coming up here, and they'll be in strange settings. I got a new portable rig. We'll be able to get some intimate recordings with various troublemakers. And I'll bet you I won't get through the fall season without at least one train wreck with Mark Manassi. It's sort of inevitable. I'm just anticipating that that's going to happen.
We love the Mark Manassi train wrecks. They're
really awesome. I think we have a bad influence on each other. I've come to appreciate that. That's sort of what it is. But let's leave that for now. And we have a guest on the line, ready to talk to us. Sean Duby is the technical director for Windows IT Pro and SQL Server Magazine. He has 25 years experience in enterprise IT, started out with Texas Instruments, moved on to Intel. These are some great companies. And these days is focused on Active Directory, and it continues to be an MVP for Active Directory. Welcome, sir.
Afternoon, guys. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Good, thanks.
So we're talking identity in the cloud. I think identity is a tough enough topic all by itself, but what does the cloud add to this?
Well, it's just an evolution of what identity management people have been doing all along. And I'm an identity geek, and actually when we started out with all this, we didn't talk in terms of identities. We were just computer administrators.
Right. Yeah.
And if you really think about it and how identity has evolved, it's gone from little tiny, tiny scope to much broader and broader scope.
Sure.
So, for example, way back when, 1993, 95, or even before that, it was all done just on a single server at a time. And so the scope of what you had to manage was just on that box, the identity, just the accounts that were on that box. And that actually includes mainframes as well, if you think about it. I know that's obviously much larger in scale, but the identity store is just on the box. Then we got work groups, Windows for work groups and stuff like that. And you had multiple nodes, and they kind of shared account information. Each node, each little PC had its own identity store. And but you could authorize them to access other resources in the work group. So that made things a little bit easier. And then we moved up to LAN Manager. I don't know if you guys were in the business when LAN Manager 2.1 and 2.2 were around.
I remember, but I was a Novell guy and happier for it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so when I stepped into client server computing, we were working at Texas Instruments with LAN Manager 2.2. And I remember the weekly, or maybe it was daily meetings with Microsoft, the operations meeting first thing in the morning, and we talk about what went wrong today, when is this going to get fixed, and it was cranky.
Man.
So I was really glad when Microsoft came up with NT, because I was, as an operating systems guy, that was the first real operating systems compared to what, right. Mark has long called Nintendo. So Mark and I go, Manassi, go way back on this sort of stuff. So, that was great. But and looking back at it, I was amazed at how quickly we ran into scalability problems on that. At Intel, we had 14 13 account domains, master account domains.
Wow.
They were numbered up to 14, but we actually had some manager didn't like the idea of an account domain being numbered 13, so he skipped over it.
Oh, man.
And an untold number of resource domains. So, and you certainly remember what a web of trusts that was. That was a nightmare to manage.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's even threatening in an Active Directory world, but pre-Active Directory, that's terrifying.
Yes. And it was, as a former manager of mine once called it, you know, you spent most of your time, it was like spaghetti strands in between all the domains, and you spent most of your time trying to keep the spaghetti wet, you know, keeping it working.
That's a great analogy, because it's just like that. It's like that little tenuous thread to that other cluster of machines. You know, are we communicating on that pipe today?
Yeah, exactly. And so, of course, you know, Active Directory and it, with its X500-ish background was a huge step up for that. When we were building Active Directory, and I was fortunate enough to be relatively fresh into Intel, and so I got to be involved in it. I managed to talk my way into the under the team to do this. So much of it was, of the work was political, because back then it was all, thou shalt have one forest.
Right.
Thou does not need anything other than one forest. So lots of work was done in smoky back rooms to get various business groups that had their own domains that they managed to come under the auspices of a single forest and go into an OU.
Right.
And that was quite a triumph that we managed to do that. Interestingly, after a few years, we all realized you couldn't do this all in one forest because of the security boundary thing.
It wasn't actually a good idea.
And we started, of course, seeing the spaghetti strands are starting to show up again. And on top of that, other areas, HR databases, physical security databases that you had to kind of all talk to. So identity began to expand beyond that to account for all of this. And that's where we started talking about meta directory services. Mm-hmm. And that made things even more complicated, because those strands of spaghetti are now quite complicated to put together and fashion. And, you know, we even had things like virtual directory services, so you could have on-the-fly snapshots of multiple data sources. But now, as to make a long story long, we come up to cloud identity. And as you said, cloud identity, that's an intimidating term, because it's two words pushed together that are already intimidating by themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure.
So I won't say a word about the cloud stuff. Lots have been already spoken about that. But cloud identity, hopefully, is pretty easy to explain. It kind of falls into two areas. There's the enterprise area, and then there's the consumer area.
Mm-hmm.
And in the enterprise area, it's all about extending your existing identity, your on-premise identity, which is usually something like Active Directory, beyond the firewall that you have, so that cloud service providers, software as a service, platform as a service, whether it's Azure or whether it's Salesforce.com, can use those identities, the identities you already have, instead of creating duplicates of their own. Because that has a whole host of problems associated with it.
Well, just like they did when it was internal. But, I mean, for most folks, AD doesn't extend beyond the internal firewall. I mean, we might have branch offices, but those tend to be WAN, you know, secure encrypted connections. Are you really talking about, if we go to cloud, we've got to open up our AD to go over the wire even further?
Well, and that has always been a stopping point, because you know, the AD professional doesn't get paid for taking risks to expose identity data. So you're right. Some companies have been, you know, they've gone so far as people are starting to put read-only domain controllers outside the firewall for special purposes and all of that. But no, by and large, it's an extremely unpopular thing to do. But for the IT professional, and in particular, you know, for the identity professional, that's hearing all about the cloud computing and all that, the area that I think is extremely important to start paying attention to and coming up to understand is the cloud identity aspects of it. And in this paradigm talking about for cloud identity, it's a different paradigm. It's not using Kerberos. It's using something called claims-based authorization and authentication to securely extend your identity out to these service providers, just giving them the information that they need to do it. You know, I wanted to mention the other aspect of cloud identity that is also very big is the consumer part of it. And the kind of the fun thing about the consumer part of cloud identity is that this is stuff you can actually explain to your non-technical friends and spouses and things like that what you do, because it's so hard for us to say what it is that we do. On that. And I don't know if you have any interest in hearing about the other half of the cloud identity, where it fits in the consumer, because that's also very big.
Because when I think about consumer identity for cloud, it's no different than consumer identity for web. Aren't they basically synonymous in that scenario?
You're right. Because the cloud services, this is from the consumer point of view, it's all software as a service,
right?
Which is, you know, as you think it was web-based services. And you know, and when people hear software as a service and what is this, it all sounds so esoteric. You know, you can simply say that, hey, Facebook is a software as a service.
Right.
Or you're using, or what you're a consumer of a software as a service in terms of Facebook. But, you know, the basic assumption behind consumer cloud identity is there's already plenty of identity stored in the cloud already.
Right.
In other words, identity providers like Google and Yahoo, Windows Live, Facebook, they're all identity providers. And they're actually, you know, you could call them identity providers because they've got an enormous number of user accounts. But they're also service providers. So they give you things like Gmail and Bing personalization, you know, and as I said, Facebook. But the idea is, and this is having had a chance to talk to a number of cloud identity professionals, what everybody wants to do right now, Microsoft, Google, PayPal, everybody wants to do right now is they want to start minimizing the number of identities that are already out there that you already have, that you have to keep adding passwords for. The mantra at the Cloud Identity Summit a few months ago was no more passwords. And this is actually really, this is very easy to explain to people the pain of cloud identity, because everybody hates entering all the user IDs and passwords for all the websites you use.
Right.
I keep a password vault, and I went and looked the other day, and I have 189 websites, all of which have to have their own identities. And, you know, you don't have to be a technical person to hate having to enter it. And of course, you know, for example, my wife keeps all of hers on a clipboard someplace.
Right.
So it's a nightmare. And the idea behind where they're trying to go in consumer cloud identity with protocols like OpenID and OAuth is, instead of a new software as a service comes up and you have to create, register yet another ID and another password, you'll see, and you're seeing this increasingly, hey, would you like to register using your Google account?
Right.
Or your Yahoo account? And which is great. And the best example that I've seen on that is, it's called Twitter feed, and you guys are probably familiar with it. When you're doing a blog entry or something like that, and if you want to tweet the fact that you've got a new blog post, or you want to send it to Facebook, or you want to send it to LinkedIn or whatever, you register for Twitter feed, and, you use OpenID to authenticate you to the service. In other words, by using OpenID, it says, would you like to use your Google account instead of our own account? Oh, yeah, sure. We'll use that. And then it uses another protocol called OAuth, and OAuth authenticates you to Twitter. Hey, what's your Twitter account? Would you like to authenticate to this? Yes. So you've just started using this service, and you've never had to enter a user ID and password on it. You just used all of your existing. And that's what people really want to try to get to, is to make it much easier for the consumer and for everybody, because nobody wants to get into the headache of managing all these consumer identities.
Right.
But anyway, that's the consumer aspect of cloud identity. So you've got the enterprise aspect, and you've got the consumer aspect of it.
And one of the issues with, you know, having to create, say, you know, your 185 different identities and track those and whatnot, is in the real world, you know, people reuse the same username and password over and over and over again. If it gets compromised in one place and you have to go and change it in all those other places in order to feel safe, I mean, at least with a, you know, a single identity provider, you know, like, you know, I mean, great examples you're using, you know, lots of people are now are signing on to systems, they're using their Facebook ID, right? For example, if I rely upon that one identity provider party, then I go and change my password in one place on Facebook or Google Apps or whatever it is, then that password is then reset for all of those services at the same time. So there's some real benefit there.
Yes, and at the summit, people talked about, you know, first the experiment of the Uber password store, you know, the right. great password store in the sky, and nobody is really comfortable with that. Certainly the consumers are not comfortable with the great password store in the sky. And the general consensus is what everyone is moving towards is a federated trust. So you have a number of the major identity providers, and they have some kind of a relationship between them, but the consumer has to authorize a certain degree of interaction in a way that they understand, hey, you know, we can also give you, you know, when you log out of this, we can also add your, I don't know, your Picasa web photos into mm-hmm. this if you allow us to authorize with Google.
Sure.
You know, and one in this area, and it's very much this question of security, which is what's hovering over all of this, obviously. I had a nice conversation with Andrew Nash, who is the director of identity for PayPal. And PayPal is considering, and I know they're playing with the idea of starting up an identity broker service for the consumer, where they take care of all of the back-end messiness. You know, remember when we would have things like zone alarm and firewall, and we'd say, oh, look, there's an alert on this port due to such and such, such and such. Do you want to allow it? I don't know. This is the same sort of thing, only for identities, where they would work on setting up the service level agreements with the identity providers and provide a consumer-friendly interface that a one-stop shopping to go to manage all of that for some nominal fee, of course, to make it easy mm-hmm. for the consumer.
So when we're talking about, you know, you've done very clearly delineate the difference between, you know, consumer identity in the cloud and enterprise identity in the cloud. What's the story on the enterprise side? On the consumer side, it sounds like we're talking about like relying parties and identity providers.
Right.
What are you referring to when you delineate the enterprise side?
So on the enterprise side, where things are migrating to or evolving is, like I said, claims-based authentication, where instead of relying on a protocol like Kerberos, you rely mm-hmm. on claims to provide you with the information that you need to authenticate to a particular app that is outside your firewall. The most common or the predominant method for doing that right now is federation. And mm-hmm. The nice thing about this is that you, Joe Sixpack inside Intel, want to access a software as a service. And if you have, and right now, one of the most prominent, well-known versions of this is Microsoft SharePoint 2010 supports claims-based authentication. So you can have SharePoint for another company, expose it outside the firewall if you're collaborating with, you know, company. So company B has got SharePoint out there, and company A, people in company A want to access those SharePoint services because they're collaborating. Using federation mm-hmm. between company A and company B, Joe Sixpack and company A can go out to that SharePoint server and access it just as if it were inside his firewall without having to provide user IDs and passwords and all that sort of thing, making collaboration outside the firewall very easy to do. As I said, federation is the technology that is doing this. And it's interesting because federation has been around for a while, and it's been around in Microsoft for a while as ADFS, Active right. Directory Federation Services. And that's been out since after Windows 2003. I can't remember exactly.
ADFS really came with 2008 in version 2 with R2.
Ah, okay, that's it.
So that's sort of as far as we've gotten with that.
Right. if you've played with ADFS at all for a while, you looked at it. So first off, there's a learning curve because it's not the most intuitive process or technology to understand. And then once you learn how it works, you say, well, that's all very well and good, but it always seemed to me like it was a technology without a requirements base. By the time you went through the pain and trauma of implementing Federation, you had a limited number of use cases that would make it a good business case for it. You know, oh, great, now I can log on to American Express Travel without having to provide a separate user ID and password. Was that worth all of that effort?
Exactly, yeah. Well, the bigger one is the modifications that need to happen inside of applications to really assert claims in the first place.
Yes.
This is just not a trivial thing to implement. And when you look at the cost compared to you just save me typing my username and password.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that's why this is going to be an evolution. And I would emphasize to anybody that happens to be listening to this that they need to be paying attention to Federation and claims-based authentication. Because right now, just a few applications are written to be using it.
Right.
But more and more and more will be modified in their upcoming versions to use CBA. And that will provide for a whole bunch of scenarios to get things done that you could never do before and start blurring safely some of the corporate boundaries that have been, you know, bricked up since the beginning of time.
You know, when I think about this from the context of a cloud, it makes perfect sense that I want to be able to log into a cloud application, and then that application will use ADFS to call back to the home identity servers and assert an identity. Right? I mean, I presume that would be the model of implementation.
Yes.
But then I remember back to PDC 2009 and Project Sydney, which is really about, to me, the way I read it, and I just was going back over the postings around this, was a VPN-like connection between the home servers and the Azure servers so that I could throw a read-only AD up in the cloud with this connection so that it stays synchronized. And then I have a local store to do identity as if those cloud machines were an extension of my office.
That's an interesting variation of it. Given, you know, just off the top of my head, given the choice between Federation and putting an IODC up there, the thing I like about Federation and the basis of what claims are all about is that you are only making available to the cloud app exactly the pieces of information that it needs to function.
Right. Well, it only asks for what it absolutely needs.
Right. Instead of putting a copier of your identity store out there, even if it's a read-only and the passwords are out there, the actual account names and all sorts of directory information is still out there.
Well, and just the cost of synchronization. As soon as I have a substantial AD of any kind, that's probably one of the biggest machines in the cloud for me is the one maintaining my identity.
Yeah, that's very much so. Another aspect, and I would mention that there are also... the Federation world is not just ADFS as well. There's a bunch of Federation providers out there, and what really was the knee in the curve for them, the adoption for it taking off, and the same with ADFS, and especially ADFS 2.0, is a rise in cloud applications. Then we had a clear-cut business case that says, oh, this makes all the sense in the world to have Federation. If we want to use Cloud App A, Cloud App B, Cloud App C, I don't want to have to keep creating duplicate identities in all of these applications. I just want to extend what I have. Not only is it the overhead, the security aspect, one of the really big scary security aspects of it is, so you create, you start using a cloud app and you don't have Federation or anything like that, so you create shadow accounts. You create duplicate accounts for that cloud app, and then some period of time later, some employee gets terminated. And guess what? You don't have a deprovisioning process for that cloud app.
Right.
Or you've forgotten. Disgruntled employee can instantly log on from his home computer and wreak havoc.
Yeah. Yeah, the actual closing out of a user. Well, but you know, you're just also pushing on this whole idea that what the direction of platform as a service or software as a service is that there, your overall application isn't going to be in one can. You know, you might have Salesforce talking to pieces of your in-home system and your own custom extensions inside of the cloud. You don't want to try and force ROs all over the place. You need the, just them, for them to ask for what they need.
Yeah, exactly. As the boundaries blur, you have to, it's just as you do within a corporation, you have to be able to provision and deprovision and have it be a full loop. Not just, a full feedback loop, a whole full life cycle, not just a one-sided life cycle.
Right.
The good news for in this time of cloud, everybody worrying about IT pros worrying about their jobs and all that, the good news for the AD or the identity professional is that, in my opinion, the identity professional's jobs are safer than ever. No one is moving identity stores off the premise anytime soon.
No.
Now, if I were a messaging support professional, I'd be looking at broadening my support skills as everybody, I don't know about everybody, but as offloading Exchange is pretty popular.
Yeah, your expertise in backing up Exchange is becoming, can become suddenly unimportant.
Yes.
You know, the fact that you understand Exchange as a whole, just because you're BPAWSing it doesn't mean you don't need to administer it still, but it's your roles are going to change.
Exactly.
Identity seems to be one of the IT areas that is only getting to be a bigger and bigger problem.
A bigger problem. I don't see the core directory service is not going anywhere. As I, I'm privy to look at what Microsoft is planning for the future and all that, they're planning ways to better integrate it with what is coming, with the cloud, with federation, with claims. But the core service is not going anywhere or doing anything in the near future. Now, that means for the AD professional or the identity professional that there are new skills involved. You need to begin to start understanding it, start paying attention to it, being able to do a little bit of work with it around cloud identity. And because your company is going to be coming to you saying, how do we do this? Sooner or later, or you should be recommending that this be done. And you can tell the business decision makers, the BDMs, simply point out, look, we'll point out that password deprovision, the account deprovisioning problem, and say, look, if you want to do this, let's do it right. It's kind of a full circle because the pressure is on the IT department right now. They're getting pressure from the BDMs because it sounds like it's money saving, right? And, BDMs are all about, they're all about money saving. But IT, of course, they're responsible for keeping the lights green, keeping the lights on and green on the, on the servers. What Brian Valentine used to say, his job was to keep the lights green.
Yeah.
They're getting pushed by the BDMs in one direction, but in the other direction, they're getting pushed by the customers because the customers see the ability to quickly and cheaply, or maybe they just think it's cheaply, to get something done without the time or the frustration and maybe the expense of working with central IT. Hey, we can just go out to this cloud provider and do it this way. But what the BDMs see is they see that their centralized dashboard that monitor all their business processes, some of the lights are starting to go dark when that happens. And IT, of course, is worried about the security of it all.
Right. Well, they're the ones going to be left holding the bag if everybody's personal information gets out.
Exactly.
So let's take some of the lingo that's common out there that you've touched on a little bit of it, but maybe throw out a few terms. We'll take them one at a time, and maybe you can expand on them, explain what it is, and plug it back into what you've been talking about. Would that be all right? So one term that we hear a lot when we're talking about identity and assertion and making it work and stuff is SAML. Can you explain what SAML is and how does that relate to the things that you're talking about?
SAML is a markup language that is evolving as one of the big standards to communicate for federation.
And then we hear about things called like relying parties and and identity providers. And then also another term that seems to come up more and more often now is a STS, or a security token service. Are you able to kind of explain what that is?
Sure. So you're right. There's a lot of jargon associated around claims-based authentication.
Yeah.
And it varies depending on who you're talking to. Now, within Federation, the question of the STS, and this is the Secure Token Service. And the STS is a component of Federation. And what my friend, the process that Federation uses going back and forth, it's about seven steps between both the identity provider and the service provider. My friend Laura Hunter, who is the she's got a great title, the identity architect for Microsoft IT, or an identity architect. She calls it the bouncy slide because Microsoft has been showing this for years. It's a great animated slide, and it shows the token going back and forth and back and forth about seven or eight times to complete the work. The secure token service, the STS, does several things, but one of the most important things that it does is it takes your identity from Active Directory, for example, and takes it from what the service provider requires, the claims that the service provider requires to provide access to its resource, and takes the identity within Active Directory and creates a set of claims around your identity, for example, to pass to that service. It's called claims transformation. More jargon. But the idea, okay, the simple thing to remember is that the STS is a component of Federation services that translates your internal corporate identity to a claims-based identity that can be used safely externally to your company.
All right. This is hardcore security identity stuff and almost a whole topic unto itself. I think we could probably spend a lot of time just digging through how these different identity pieces move together.
Yeah, you can definitely go down the rabbit hole on this stuff.
Yeah, but it also occurs to me that as companies are bringing cloud into their enterprise, identity is going to shape the nature of the apps that can be moved to the cloud. Like, they're definitely strata of once we have this level of authentication or recognition of an app, of a person within the organization, then we can run these kinds of apps and so on. So it does seem to be a shaping force.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, but an interesting challenge to just sort of rope together these different bits of technology. I think the big stumbling block here, and we sort of touched on this earlier on, was the split between what the ops guys are controlling, what the IT folks are controlling, and what the developers are controlling. As soon as I have a dependence on developers to build in support for certain levels of security, I'm going to have problems. I can control things on my side here to push identity around, but if I have to engage them, now it's going to take longer, and we have to. It's a much more complicated process.
Yes, you know, and I was just talking with Michelle Bustamante a few days ago, and we were talking about, she's a developer, as you well know, and we were talking about the need for developers to begin incorporating claims-based authentication claims into their applications as they develop and go on.
Right. Well, and just this idea that we're, as ops folks, we're going to have to push these requirements over to developers to, this is no different than getting away from, in the ASP.NET world, getting away from forms-based authentication and actually using AD, getting the developers to actually do that in their apps and checking roles and so forth. This is just the next generation beyond that.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should mention that, because I was at a previous conversation I'd had a while ago with Jackson Shaw, who's the identity guy for Quest software. And with software developers putting new features into their apps is sort of a chicken and egg thing. You know, they don't want to spend the money to develop a new feature if they don't think anyone's going to use it. And of course, more people aren't going to be using it until more developers start putting those capabilities into their applications.
Yep.
But I think that claims-based auth is right now is over the hump for that people are realizing And it's a pretty easy sell to say, look, you'll be able to do these things with your app that you weren't able to do before, and you could jump right in the cloud computing bandwagon if you have this capability.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is a gatekeeper feature to get this working.
Yes.
Gentlemen, I think we've gone a little long here. I feel more identity geek than I have in a long time. Sean, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Sean.
Appreciate it. Always a lot of fun.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.